Coming to you from Indianapolis, Indiana, the gaming capital of the world, it's episode 66 of Game On with Cody and John.
This is Game On with Cody and John, the uncommon podcast for the common gamer, bringing you the latest and greatest from the world of tabletop gaming, board games, card games, RPGs, and miniatures wargaming, news and discussions on gaming and gamer culture, plus reviews of some of the best games on the market. And now, from the Game On Studios in Indianapolis, Indiana, here are Cody Jones and John Richard.
Well, howdy gamers, it is Game On with Cody and John. I'm Cody.
And I'm John. Welcome to the Uncommon Podcast for the Common Gamer. It's been another great week in the gaming capital of the world. Great couple weeks, actually. Mm-hmm. Cody, how you doing?
Pretty good. It is like sunny and 72.
It's beautiful.
And rainy guy as I am, that's some beautiful weather.
Oh, yeah. And hey, apologies to you listeners out there. It's been a little while since we brought an episode to you. I had an unexpected business trip that I had to go on, so I was gone for about a week, week and a half. So we finally got the microphones back set up, our headphones on, and we're ready to bring you some great Game On content. Cody, what are we talking about this time?
Well, we're going to talk about filler, specifically filler games. We're going to be talking about later, doing a by Trier and I on a new-to-you game, a Biblios. But it's been described as the perfect filler game, and that kind of got us thinking, what is a filler? You know, some people, you know, may not use the term filler. So we're going to talk about that and what are some good filler games that we would recommend for your collection.
Exactly. We've also got a contest coming for you where you could win a great game. We'll go ahead and tease you with that. So keep listening. We'll have a great contest for you coming up. We also got some other stuff. We got the great Game On inbox. You know, like I said, it's been a couple of weeks. So we've got some stuff we want to talk to you guys about. But, you know, as always, we're going to start off with a rundown. And that begins
now. All right, it's time for the rundown where John and I bring you all of the geekery which we've been engaged in. John, you've been working quite a bit, so why don't you give your abbreviated rundown first?
This is probably the saddest rundown in the history of Game On with Cody and John for me, because I actually sat here at my little phone and my little color note application trying to figure out what I've been playing, and it's been sparse.
Yeah.
Because I have missed not one, but two Game On game nights, because we had the fifth Tuesday of the month. So, and then we had the first Tuesday, the next week after that. I was out of town both of those Tuesdays, so I didn't get to play anything at those. And honestly, I think the last game that I played was when you and I played Troyes, which was like literally 2.5 weeks ago.
So, no, you mean Troyes.
Troyes. So this is, Troyes or Troyes. It's pronounced Troyes. It's a city in France, right? It's a new game released last year, and it's been now published in the United States by Z-Man Games. And it's a very interesting Euro-style game, but it's got a dice-rolling element to it that I really liked. And Cody, I think you thought it was pretty decent, right?
Yeah, yeah. I liked it more than I thought. It was kind of this... you know, it was a little bit of Kingsburg Alien Frontiers meets hardcore Euro game, and it had this the way you interacted with the dice and interacted with other people's dice. It was interesting. It was refreshing. I'd never played anything like it.
Yeah, I mean, it's a victory point game at its heart. You're trying to collect the most victory points. So the way that you're able to acquire those is a little bit circuitous, I think. So it's not...
Whoa, thank
you.
Circuitous.
You like that? It's multi-syllabic.
You looked that up before you came.
I sure did.
Yeah.
But there's many ways to get victory points, but it's not real clear. It's clear on the board, but developing a strategy, I think, will take multiple plays to really figure it out. So there's a lot going on in the game. But the basics are is that based upon the number of little meeples that you have on certain areas of the board, you'll get a pile of dice to roll. And the overall number of dice in the game is finite, just like the number of spaces where you can put meeples on the board is finite, and there's a phase in the game where you're going to place those. But you'll roll your dice that represent your workforce, more or less, and then you're going to set them on the board. And then over the course of the game, you'll have actions that you can spend where you're going to spend the dice to be able to do things on the board. So this very much is kind of like Kingsburg or Alien Frontiers. We're going to place dice in certain places to be able to do things, sort of worker placement-esque. But the interesting thing about this game that makes it different from other games with this kind of dice mechanic is that you can buy other people's dice and they have to accept. So if you there's money in the game and you can purchase those dice to be able to use in certain actions, and they don't really have a say. So when you roll your dice, there's a little bit of strategy. You can say, well, I've got these dice and I can hopefully do this. But as the game goes around, everybody takes an action one at a time. the number of dice in the middle starts to change and the distribution of the dice changes, and that's going to change what you're able to do. So it's real fluid as far as that goes, which makes it, I think, a little bit difficult to develop a strategy in the game.
Well, I think there's also enough, you know, some people's complaints on Kingsburg and Alien Frontiers is that, you know, it's too luck-based. And I think with Alien Frontiers, and probably even more so with Twa, is that you can really mitigate that more with card play and kind of just developing that strategy. It's not all just, well, I rolled crappy, so I can only do these few actions.
Yeah, and there's these action cards in the game that you can place meeples on that will be sort of game rules changers where you can change your dice. Also, there's two currencies in the game. There's the money itself, the actual gold, and then along the top of the board there's an influence track, and you're going to use influence to like recruit new workers. You can also use influence to change your dice. You can change the faces on dice and re-roll dice. So there's a lot of options, a lot of things going on. What did you think of the artwork in the game? Because it's very different from anything that I've seen.
Yeah, I thought it was appropriate for the game. I could see how some people maybe wouldn't care for it, but I thought it was fine. I mean, for a Euro, it pulls you into the theme, I guess.
Yeah. Well, again, like I was about to say, is that I didn't really mention the theme of the game because, oh, who the hell knows what it is, yeah, really? Right. I mean, it's basically you're in this city and there's different areas and there's like there's a military part of it and there's the religious part, like the bishop.
It's basically like city management.
Yeah, but it's real vague as to how it works. I mean, I guess it maybe makes sense, but I don't know anything about the history of that city. But anyway, I think it's a real good game. If you like sort of a medium to heavy Euro style game with that dice rolling thrown into it, I think it's unique. I think it's a really a fun one. So I went ahead and picked it up through Myriad Games, and I would recommend it. So I played that one. Okay, that I talked for a long time because the list is kind of short here. We had an opportunity to play a role playing game. Did we talk about that one?
I don't believe so.
Okay, so our friend Sean Johnson, who is one of the co-founders of the Game On Game Night that we started a few months ago, he's going to be running some RPG events at Gen Con this year, and he invited me and Cody and Kalen over to playtest his RPG adventure. And do you remember what the name of the system was?
Yeah, it was Two-Fisted Tales. It's a pulp a system that is based around a 2D10 mechanic, and it was kind of nice because the only real pulp game I'd ever played was Hollow Earth Expedition, because yeah, I played the crap out of that. So it was nice. I think it was a pre-written scenario that we did, but Sean really did a great job. He apparently had been out of DMing for like 10 years or something like that.
It didn't show.
Yeah, I mean, he did a great job. He had he made me very jealous for the iPad, because he had one of the iPad 2s and he had it rigged with music and sound effects at the right time, and it really brought you into that pulp feel, you know, like when the theme music came on and things like that. So he did a bang up job. So if you get a chance, check out, I think it's sold out, but you never know what happens at Gen Con, check out Two-Fisted Tales.
Yeah, and you know, you can always show up with generic tickets. Mm-hmm. There's a chance you might get in there, so I would say it's definitely worth it. So. Yeah,
and we have received, you know, to jump ahead a little bit, we have received a few questions in the Game On inbox about Gen Con and generic tickets. I think before too long, we'll be releasing our Gen Con episode, our Gen Con guide, you might say, for this year, so stay tuned for that.
Yeah, but I will say, just again, to jump in on Gen Con stuff, that if you're planning on coming to Gen Con, you haven't gotten your badge yet, do it now as you're listening to this, because I think it's sometime in the next few days from today is the 13th of June that we're recording this show. I think it's like the 18th or 19th is when the badge prices go up, and you maybe can't get it online anymore or something like that. So
don't be a dummy.
Yeah, just get on that right away. So, and I believe that at this point you can purchase generic tickets through the ticket system, which you couldn't do right from the beginning. What else? I've been playing a Ticket to Ride.
Oh my!
Through the Ages.
Yeah, a little different.
A little different. Playing that online, I think we mentioned, with Jeff Engelstein from Ludology Podcast and the Dice Tower, and Russ Wakeland from the D6G. Cody's in the lead.
I don't think it's going to last.
You don't think so?
I don't know how I'm in the lead. So
he's in the lead by a ton.
By a ton, yeah, but I'm in second. I'm a straw man. It's like there's, I'm very weak. I think I'm just going to get beat up.
See, I feel like with the Jedi mind tricks of Russ Wakeland and the gaming mind of Engelstein, I think we're toast, man. I think by the end of this game, we're going to be down by like 50 points.
Yeah.
But we're having a great time with that. I've heard there's some even other ways to play online. We're using a program called Cyberboard, but I think that there are some other ways you can play Through the Ages online. And so, maybe look around on BoardGameGeek. You might be able to find that. Again, a great game.
Mm-hmm.
One last thing, and that's it. That's, I mean, that's pretty much it. But I have one last game. We've talked in the past about that great dexterity game, Sorry Sliders. One of the few games in the mass market that we think is a top notch game. That's one that's worth picking up. It's kind of a Crokinole meets shuffleboard meets who knows. You know, meets Sorry. You know, with these little ball bearings in the bottom of Sorry pieces. It's a great game. They have now come out with a Sorry Sliders version that is a media tie-in with the new movie that's coming out, Cars 2. Media tie-in games, in general, tend to suck.
Yeah.
But I just couldn't help it. I looked at the box and I saw that it was a Sorry Sliders version. I turned the box over and saw that it's basically set up like a racetrack. So I'm thinking, hey, this could be kind of like Pitch Car or something like that. And it is a lot of fun. So it's really, I think, more geared for, of course, for families and with kids. But I played this with my two small kids, and they had a blast. And it has some fun things in it where you basically get two flicks of the Sorry Slider thing of your car around the track. You have to make it around like three or four laps or something like that. But when you hit certain spots, it's like the radioactive zone. And if you land in that certain spot, your next flick has to be with your eyes closed. And there's also these little three-dimensional oil slicks and little traffic cones and things that you have to sort of navigate around, and little chicanes that they kind of put in there. And it's cute.
It sounds cute. Yeah.
I mean, I think it retails for like $20 or $25, something like that. And so if you've got small kids that want to teach them a little fun dexterity game, I think this is actually a pretty decent addition to their Sorry Sliders line. So. That's it, man. Wow. That's all I got.
Not great.
Cody, give me your rundown.
See, kind of conversely here, I've played so many games that I'm just going to give you the highlights
here.
You had
to cull the list.
That's right. I've played a few games of Biblios that we're going to talk about later. I got that in the mail just a few days ago and already have two or three plays in. It's a really fun little game.
Nice.
I got a chance at one of the game nights to play Lords of Scotland, and that's something that Sean brought. And it's an interesting game. It's the designer really liked games like Three Dragon Ante, and it plays a lot like that.
You're not building casinos in Edinburgh.
No, you're not. Gambling. There you go. No, it's it actually just plays a lot like Three Dragon Ante, a little differently. It kind of it's a pasted on theme. You know, you're trying to collect these different kind of Scottish clans to your side, and so you can dominate Scotland. And you know, I'm a Scottophile, so you know, I'm like, oh yeah, I like it. It's a really fun game. It plays off that Three Dragon Ante mechanic. The one thing, and I mentioned this on the Twitter feed, this game is ugly as sin. I mean, it's really? I take a look at the cards, and I don't want to bash the illustrator or the designer or anything, but I don't know how games get out the door looking that bad.
Ooh.
I mean, it looks...
This is a Z-Man game, right?
Yeah.
I believe it's pretty... And yeah, he seems like he usually looks over his stuff pretty well.
Yeah, so it's a really fun game. It's got a great price point, $10.
Nice.
I mean, it's just a deck of cards, but I mean, it's a really good experience from 2 to 5, I believe. So $10, it's a really good price point. But the game is just ugly as all get out. So check it out, but maybe hide your eyes while you do it. Also at the game night, for my first time, I got to play Memoir 44 Overlord style.
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry I missed that.
Oh, that was fun. I was the commander-in-chief of the Axis.
I'm shocked. You played the commander-in-chief. I never would have guessed that you would take that role.
Calm down. The scenario was kind of built against us. I think we were doing Market Garden. The Allies ended up winning. But we made a close game out of it. And it was a lot of fun.
Who was the commander on the other side?
It was Sean's wife, Abigail.
Really?
Yes.
Okay.
The cunning Allied commander.
Nice.
But it was really neat because I think per the scenario, the Allies got, like, she got 10 cards to pick from and I got 4.
Oh,
and that
geez.
Never really changed. So there were a lot of times where I was just giving someone on the left flank just like a pat on the back. It's like, well, I've got no cards for you, so just pick a unit and go, you know. But it was a lot of fun. I mean, that we played with the Overlord expansion, the one they came out with. So it was a paper mat, and it used little chits to fill in where there weren't enough plastic miniatures.
Oh, okay.
And it was a load of fun, and we played it in about an hour 15. It wasn't too long. I really want to play like this more often because it's like I like Memoir, but this mode steps it up. So.
8 players, right?
Players. Yeah, that's full on.
That's huge. Yeah.
It was a blast.
Cool.
Other things I played, I've gotten the Resistance to the table a few times, and I finally got the expansion for it.
There's an expansion.
It comes with it.
Oh.
It's kind of like it's included expansion, which
Yeah.
I don't really care for it. I think it clunks it up a little bit.
What does it do? Can you explain it?
Yeah, you get these. There are these cards called plot cards, And every round, the leader draws a few and distributes them. And it's basically kind of like game-breaking cards where you can look at other people's votes or, take control of the leader position or stuff like that. And I could see how it would add intrigue, but to me, it kind of got in the way of the simplicity of the game. I might try it again. I'd like to try it maybe with 10 people, but the Resistance continues to be a great bang for the buck. You know, it's a perfect kind of trader element game for that 5 to 10 range. So
awesome.
Really like that. And finally, Code 777 has made a few appearances to the table, and I'm getting good at it, I'm afraid. So.
Now, I played that one. I couldn't remember if that was it's been so long since we had an episode. But yeah, no, I got to play that one for the first time, and I thought it was great. And
yeah.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah, very fun game.
What did we say, 3 for 3 for Stronghold?
Yeah, 3 for 3. I think that wraps it up on my end.
Okay, cool. One other thing I wanted to mention, sort of from a news perspective, is that the nomination, I know we don't normally care about this, but the nominations for the Spiel des Jahres have come out.
Uh-huh.
And that's, I think, going to be announced at the end of this month. And this year... Yeah, okay, just take your nap away from the mic.
Oh,
and so this year they've added a new category called the Kenner Spiel des Jahres, which is supposed to be sort of the more advanced game or more gamerly style game. And instead of doing 5 nominees like they normally do, they've done 3 in each of these categories. So there's 3 for Spiel des Jahres, 3 for Kenner Spiel, and then 3 for the Kinderspiel, which is the kids' game. So the 3 nominees for the Spiel des Jahres this year are Quirkle, which has been out in the United States for like 5 years.
Yeah.
Forbidden Island, and this Euro game that I'd never heard of called Asara.
Okay.
And then for the Kenner Spiel des Jahres, we have 7 Wonders, Lancaster, and Strasbourg. Those last two sound really good, don't they?
Yeah, 7 Wonders are going to win that.
I think probably so.
Forbidden Island's probably going to win the other one, too.
You think so?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, and Matt Leacock, who's the designer of Forbidden Island, he's been nominated twice before for both Pandemic and Roll Through the Ages. So, I don't know. I'm not even sure if I understand how the jury goes about picking these things anymore. So, I kind of lean more towards the Dice Tower Awards just because I was part of, you know, picking the nominations for them, I guess.
We only like awards where we have a hand in picking
that's
them.
Not what I meant. But I do feel like that reflects more of kind of my gaming taste. Asara looks interesting enough that I'd like to pick that one up and see what it's all about.
Yeah, it's I used to have stock in the Origins Awards until I really found out kind of how they're determined and, just a lot of ballot stuffing and stuff. And it's like when, you know, I love the Looney Pyramids, but when Treehouse wins like Board Game of the Year,
something's wrong.
I don't know. I don't think that's accurate.
Yeah, when those Origins Award comes out this year, they've got some good nominations, so I'm hoping that they'll turn it around. But anyway, so if that's interesting to you, this, you know, Spiel des Jahres and that kind of stuff, you know, we'll let you know who won those awards when they get announced at the end of this month. But that always means a big jump in sales for whatever company happens to be producing those games. So it's interesting. It's always good to bring the best games up, to, you know, the cream to rise to the top and all that kind of stuff. And
that's right.
Even if they are Euro games, right?
Yeah.
Right? Huh?
I like that. All right. One other thing I want to mention is that if you've been following us on Facebook or Twitter, you've seen that we have Game On Dice.
Finally.
Finally. It's something we talked about, I think, since the founding of the show. And we're like, oh, it'll be way down the line.
Well, plus we were just like, well, lots of other shows have dice, you know, but... We gotta have dice too.
Yeah, we gotta have dice. So we have some beautiful dice.
Beautiful,
and they are. You can check us out on Facebook or Twitter to see the pictures. But they're kind of the produced by Chessex. They have this blue. They're predominantly kind of a bright blue, and then they have gold pips. And the Game On logo is the 6, of course.
The big go.
That's right. Because if you roll a 1, we don't want you to see. Dang it! Freaking Game On. You'll be like, I rolled well. Game on.
You know? Ah.
So if you go to our website. We will have a link to shop.gamesalute.com. You can go just directly there if you would prefer.
Yeah.
And there is a link there where you can buy sets of dice, and you get the prices there. And the proceeds to those dice go to help the show. So not only do you get cool dice, you get to get a kickback and help the show. And you can buy the dice. You can buy singles. You can buy like the little 12-count boxes that are kind of neat.
Right.
So, you know, for wargaming and stuff like that, grab a few, support the show, and if you run into John or possibly myself at Origins, you might get a die that way.
Just ask us about it, you know. I mean, we're not going to be throwing them around, but, you know.
That's right, yeah.
But if you ask us about it, maybe you can get some dice there.
Absolutely. So check that out. Go to either just gameonpodcast.com and click the link there, or go to shop.gamesalute.com. Yeah. All right, it's time for the Game On inbox, and we've selected a few from the deluge of emails that we've received.
Deluge.
Nice. Thank you.
John, you can tell I'm from the South. My grandfather always used to say deluge.
It may be deluge. I don't know.
I don't know.
All right. But anyway, John, you got the first one.
All right, so this is kind of turning into the Wade Kemper inbox.
That's right.
No, our good buddy Wade, who had a GM Academy question for us.
He had that jerk of a player.
Yeah. He's given us the update. So all of you who are following the saga here,
one dead.
Here's the update. He says, "Hey, gang, it's Wade again, giving you guys an update on the 4E player who is a passive-aggressive, complaining nightmare of a player."
Oh, things are going well, it looks like.
No love lost there. "Shortly after your podcast went live, I played it for all the other group members."
It's like, this is terrible. What are we listening
what
to?
What is this crap?
What are these two hicks have to know about gaming?
"And they all agreed with your advice." Oh, okay. No accounting for taste there. "However, we decided to take a more giving approach. As a minor aside, we got the babysitter to sit and play a covert session. She's a natural, and League's more in tune than this other guy. Bad omens for him."
I still want to know who's watching the kids.
I know, the babysitter's playing. Yeah.
So you're paying the girl to play, well, maybe a guy, I guess. You're paying the person. You got to be PC. Yeah. You're paying the person to sit and play D&D?
They're fine.
We're going to get a follow-up email about the babysitter.
Just put the knife block on the floor. They can play with those. All right. "If you recall, one of the contentious items was his constant bashing of our homebrewed world, and no concessions we ever made would be enough for this guy. If you gave this guy the solar system, he'd complain that it was cooler when Pluto was a planet." Zing, he says.
Ow.
Ooh. "A few brainstorming sessions later, the DMs and creators of the homebrew world, three of us in a rotating schedule, got together and decided that we were going to abandon the interesting aspects of the world and play it more like classic 4E. Really? Enfolding all of the published products, classes, race, except for the Warforged, keep your robots out of my fantasy."
Yeah, they belong in Eberron. Keep them there.
That's right. I like the Warforged, though.
Well, they're cool in Eberron, but Wizards has kind of tried to shoehorn them into the... It's like, oh, Warforged in Forgotten Realms. It's like, that doesn't make any sense.
I played a campaign one time where a guy played a Warforged paladin that had like an intelligence of 10 or something like that. And he basically played it like Dudley Do-Right.
Yeah.
It was pretty funny. We keep the map. Everything else resets.
That's a heck of a concession. I know concession. We keep interrupting. I'm sorry.
Sorry, Wade. "I then added the new caveat that based on wifely requests, mine plays with us, so she was cool either way, we cut from once every 2 weeks to once every 3 weeks. Here's the straw that broke the camel's back. Not a word of thanks, relief, excitement. He just complained about going from 2 to 3 weeks. Needless to say, all of us wives and kids were up in arms."
Yeah.
Yeah. "I'll spare you the ugliness." Oh, I wish he'd gone into the ugliness. That's always fun.
Shots fired.
"But I wound up formally telling, not asking him to leave the group. He did, and we are better off for it. The irony is that he'd love what we're doing now. Tomb of Horrors, baby." But that story is for another email. Thanks for the good, level-headed advice, Wade.
I'm glad that ended up working out.
Yeah.
Man, after all the concessions that were made, him still complaining that they're going from 2 to 3 weeks.
That just goes to show you, though, that sometimes you do need to be direct. I think they handled it fine, but they had to go through all these concessions and everything, and it still didn't really please the guy. So sometimes you just got to nip it in the bud.
And it also plays into our unofficial motto of the show, effing gamers.
That's true. I can't tell you how many times, listeners, Cody and I will be reading a post on Board Game Geek,
not even related to us, just some.
No, just and I'll just send them a text or something, and we just shake our heads and just go, "Effing gamers!" Yeah. It's just amazing how people are sometimes.
I'll still always remember the guy that wanted Vassal to provide transcripts of every episode of the Dice Tower,
and seemed very offended that couldn't be provided easily. So, anyway,
all right. Next one is from David Dougal, and he says, "Hey, Cody and/or John."
Oh, hello.
Hey, Cody.
You get both of us.
This is Dave up here on the sunny beaches of Canada.
Okay,
long time listener, first time caller.
Oh, the LTL FTC.
Yep. Ditto. I've really been digging the podcast lately, and it's compelled me to write in, let you guys know that you keep the bus ride to and from work entertaining twice a month. Well, thank you. On the last couple episodes, I've gotten myself to wondering what. Whatever happened to single L? I understand that John's change of work venue may have caused him to fall off the radar. I was just wondering if that was the case. Maybe he should make it to a game on game night. That guy was wacky. That's an understatement.
Yeah.
Personally, I think that guy should come on as Wayne the announcer guy's apprentice. Just in the middle of the Cold War episode now. You guys are great. Keep up the good work. What did happen to Single L?
All right. Well,
Father-to-be Single L.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Well, David, you are right. I did change jobs about a year ago now. And so I don't get to see Single L nearly as much. I've gotten a chance to get together with him a couple of times, and we're friends on Facebook and so forth. So we do occasionally get in contact, but he hasn't been able to come back on the show. And that's a good idea. I should invite him to the Game On Game Night. I think, like Cody says, though, I think the time might be limited that we're able to get him to come back to gaming stuff, because he is actually expecting a first baby, I think, in November.
Yeah.
My father to be there. So
the window's closing.
I know.
Hey, and while we're at it, if there's anyone else you think would make a good guest on the show, shoot us an email at the Game On Inbox.
GameOnInbox@gmail.com.
Because we'd love your feedback there. You know, it was nice having Drakenstrike, Jeremy D. Salinas, on a few episodes back.
Yeah.
So it'd be nice to either maybe get him back or get some other folks in. It's always good having guests. So,
absolutely.
Let us know who you would like.
And we have the internets and the Skype. So
we could
do some remote stuff if necessary. So, but yeah, I actually passed on this message to Single L that mm-hmm. someone had asked about him. And I think he said in his jocular style, you know, my public is hungry for me. So, yeah, we'll try to see if we can get him back on the show at some point.
We need Single L now more than ever.
Absolutely. All right, so thanks for that email, David. And our final email in the Game On Inbox is from Matt Nuttleman from beautiful Lincoln, Nebraska.
You know, I don't know if this is near Lincoln, but I was in Western Iowa a week or two back, and uh-huh. It's pretty country out there.
Yeah,
considering the farthest west I've ever been is like Omaha, Nebraska. So.
I was flying to Denver on my business trip, I think I flew over Nebraska.
Yeah,
it was cool.
Yeah.
Okay, so Matt writes, "Dear Cody and John, greetings from the windswept Great Plains. As this is my first time writing in, I would be remiss if I failed to mention how much I enjoy the Game On podcast." Well, we.
Thank you.
We enjoy making it for you. Your conversation... Oh, then he goes on, which... thank you very much for all the kind comments. Do I need to read those?
No.
Okay. He says some very nice things about our show. Thank you very much. First, in episode 63, I believe, you asked listeners for feedback on the best gaming accessory that they own. A couple of years ago, I accompanied my wife to a sale at a local crafty or fabric store. As I wandered around the store, I found a bolt of cloth that I can only describe as, quote, that rubbery high friction fabric with all the little balls in it that people use in the cabinets of their RVs to keep their stuff from sliding around.
I know what he's talking about.
Yep. Maybe you guys have a better name for it. No, I don't actually. It's that stuff. Yeah. I ended up buying a 5x3 foot piece for less than $10. I thought that it might be useful during games and was not disappointed when I got home and tested it out. The fabric makes it almost impossible for objects on the table to slide around. When played on top of this material, games with boards constructed from multiple pieces, like Twilight Imperium, Tide of Iron, even Carcassonne, for example, no longer suffer from the slow but steady jostling during play that results in gaps and misalignments. That's cool, because I hate that.
Yeah.
Personally, that always drives me nuts. I'm always the little guy fiddling with the pieces, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, he says, games with a single board can be played without worrying about a jumping pet or overzealous gamer suddenly bumping the board and scattering the pieces. The fabric is also excellent surface for rolling dice. The friction makes them roll instead of slide, and the material dampens the noise so my wife and I can play dice games at night without waking the kids. Also a good thing. When a game is over, I roll up the fabric and store it on the shelf with my games. I cannot recommend enough that gamers look around their local fabric or craft store to see if they can find some of this stuff.
Yeah, I don't even know what the thing is called, but I have a couple rolls of it, and I use it for... I never even thought to use it for board games, but I use it to keep... for D&D, I put it under my battle mat so when people are moving their miniatures, it doesn't move the mat as well. And it's really good. I mean, that stuff doesn't move.
Nice, nice. Okay. And he has one other thing he wants to mention here. Second, I have an RPG question for you.
It's like GM Community College here.
Okay, hold on. Okay, we know what that means.
Very good.
Yep, very good. Okay.
Well, I thought it was Community College because it was going to be a quick question. But you rang up the music, so we're at the academy.
Okay, sorry. I'm not sure what the music for GM Community College would be.
I don't know.
Like, Welcome Back, Cotter or something.
Welcome back.
Anyway, after watching the Community episode about D&D, yeah. My wife became interested in role-playing games. I have some knowledge of RPGs, but have never actually played one. Do either of you know of any RPGs that would work with only two players? We have two young children and do almost all of our board gaming after the kids are asleep, so short sessions, 45 minutes to an hour, are another constraint. Additionally, fantasy and magical stuff probably wouldn't be our first choice of theme. The idea of something with a narrative story arc that we can revisit a few times a month sounds like a nice break from all the short games we play, but we realize that there probably aren't any RPGs that are accessible for us right now. Thanks, guys. Keep up the good work.
Matt. That's a tough one. Lone wolfing.
That's what they called lone wolfing. One-on-one there.
The two that come to mind, I know I recommend this one for about every dang thing, but Hollow Earth Expedition. I think
cha-ching, Exile Games.
They need to be cutting me a check.
I know, right?
But that one could be nice because you could focus that as like one pulp hero, you know, kind of going around doing stuff. That wouldn't be too hard. And I would even say it's a little off the beaten path and may take a little bit because it's got kind of wacky rules. But the fact that you've not played an RPG before may help you, and that would be Mouse Guard.
Oh, okay.
Because I think it's built for those kind of short sessions anyway, because each session is just based around a very simple mission. It's very role-playing heavy. I think that would be good. Mm-hmm. So I would say Hollow Earth Expedition or Mouse Guard.
Okay, and on the board game side for me, since they are board game players, I would say if you want to do something that's sort of transitional from RPGs, something like Tales of the Arabian Nights might give somewhat of an RPG feel. It's kind of like Choose Your Own Adventure, the game, where you're moving around on a board, and based upon certain places that you go and things that you decide, you're going to read paragraphs from a book that are going to tell a story. I think it's a really cool game. It's not a role-playing game at all, but it might give you still that kind of storytelling feel. You said you're not too interested in fantasy and magical stuff, but if you didn't mind things like sort of in the horror genre, then the new Mansions of Madness from Fantasy Flight Games might be a good one. I think you can play that one with two players pretty well.
Yeah.
And it's still got that sort of an RPG storytelling feel without being a full-on RPG.
The time constraints for both of those, maybe.
Oh, that's true, yeah.
But
I kind of hijacked your GM Academy. I'm sorry about that.
It's all right.
Yeah, okay.
I don't need a graduate assistant here, sir.
That's true. No, I was trying to be the GMTA there. That didn't work.
I like it.
All right, so anyway, that's thank you, Matt, for writing us, and hopefully those things will help you out. Definitely listen to Chancellor Jones.
Thank you.
All right, so I think it about wraps up the Game On Inbox for this episode.
Yeah, I'd say so.
Okay. If you ever want to get a hold of us, we'd love to hear from you, and you can reach us at the Game On Inbox.
At gameoninbox@gmail.com.
You can also send us a voicemail at the Game On Hotline.
At 4138-GAME-ON.
You got it on the first try.
I did.
Good job. Thank you. And Marge will be happy to take your call.
The boys.
All right, so we want to have a little discussion about filler games. Kind of the main topic for the show is just to talk about that. But before we do that, we would be remiss if we did not pay our due homage.
Our due penance.
Our due penance to our great sponsor, Myriad Games. Cody, why don't you tell us a little bit about Myriad?
I will there, buddy.
I'm a podcaster.
Yeah. Myriad Games sponsors Game On with Cody and John, on behalf of friendly professional gaming stores everywhere. And something you want to check out over at MyriadGames.com is that they're restructuring their MVP memberships a little bit so that those of you who don't get to take advantage of Myriad's local perks, kind of like their gaming spaces and just their friendly service, you can...
And Dan.
And Dan, of course.
Face-to-face Dan Yarrington there.
That's Dan, yeah. You got a footstool? anyway, they have a lot of great things you can pick out and do an a la carte style.
Oh, and, a cafeteria plan
and
there.
Keep
yeah.
the pudding. And you can pick and choose what benefits you want and really tailor-make your MVP experience, because it is an experience. Wouldn't you say? This is where you say yes. It's
yes, experience. It's absolutely an experience.
But seriously, you can tack on, you know, whatever you want and get the kind of service that you want and frankly that you need from a friendly professional game store. So check out MyriadGames.com. Do it.
All right, so let's jump into our discussion about filler games. So this was kind of your idea.
Yeah.
So what do you have to say, Cody?
Well, thanks, buddy.
Tell us the scoop and the skinny.
Well, it kind of started when I was I was looking at user reviews of Biblios that we'll talk about later on BGG, and I was just kind of looking at things, and the word filler kept coming up. Filler, great filler, bad filler, whatever. And it got me thinking, you know, I don't really like the meta game discussions that often. You know, what is a game? What is strategy? You know, things like that. I'm not the biggest meta guy. But I have to think, you know, what one man's filler is could be another man's meaty experience. Because there are, you know, there are plenty of games, you know, like take like Munchkin, you know, some people,
please, ah,
but you know, people that actually play it may consider that a filler and then we'll move on to other things. But there are probably some gaming groups where that may be the heaviest game they play. And that's, you know, that's not necessarily a good or a bad thing, but you know, I just kind of want to get into a discussion on, you know, what makes a filler game, and really, are there any filler games? Because it's that kind of has the connotation to me. It's like, well, you know, we got some time to burn. Let's play this little game. And, yeah. And where some of these games are actually really, really good. And I don't think they're any better or worse than, you know, the 2-3-4 hour games.
Okay. Well, I've been thinking about this since you brought the topic up. Uh-huh. And here's the two things I think make a filler game. And the way you weight those things, I think, is entirely up to you. One is time. Mm-hmm. And you just mentioned that. You know, we've got time between games, you know. So I think people usually use the word filler to describe a game that's going to fill like a half an hour or less time frame, right?
Yep.
And then the other thing is weight of game. And so I think a lot of people, will, when they think of filler games, they're thinking that it's going to be something light. You know, that something is not going to take a lot. Like a Munchkin is, you know, not a heavy game. It's right. A very light game. But I'm not sure those two things kind of play together as far as, you know, whether something is whether something short or light or heavy, or and it probably has something to do more with the group that you're playing with than anything else. But, you know, I think you're right that the word filler, I think it's a kind of a negative connotation, doesn't it? Because of that.
Yeah, because it seems like, you know, take a game like For Sale, you know,
yeah,
pretty good filler game.
But sometimes has been called the quintessential filler game.
Yeah, but to me, it seems like more people are just saying, oh, we have a block of time we need to fill. Oh, For Sale is fine.
Right.
Rather than people are saying, I really want to play For Sale.
Yeah.
Bring it to the table, you know. And
it's like an afterthought.
Yeah, it seems to really kind of downplay the value of some of these games. It's like, well, it's just filler. It's like, I don't know if I like using that term, because it's like, okay, it's a shorter game, but it doesn't necessarily have to serve as filler either before or after an entree of a game, you know, like a 2 or 3 hour experience.
It just fills space, yeah, fills up time.
You know, I think that does a disservice to those games, because they're really good and sometimes better than some of their longer counterparts.
Here's a good example. Seven Wonders.
Mm-hmm.
So you get seven players, or fewer even, but mm-hmm. you know, even if you get seven players who all know the game cold, you can knock that guy out in 20 minutes, probably.
20, 30 minutes.
Yeah. But would people call that a filler game?
Yeah, I wouldn't.
I wouldn't either, no. You know. But I don't think most people would. But why not? Because it fills that time, you know.
You could say it's the production, because a lot of these filler games, For Sale, Biblios, you could even say Citadels to a degree,
yeah,
come in these small boxes. And I'm all for small boxes, you know. But Seven Wonders comes in this huge honking, you know,
board game size box
that a normal 2 or 3 hour game would come in. So I wonder if, you know, perception is reality a little bit there. You see this game, it's like, well, that can't possibly be a filler. It's too big to be a filler.
Right, right.
You know, where you have Biblios that takes about the same amount of time, but it's in a box more than, you know, less than half the size of Seven Wonders.
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess that is that interplay between the weight of the game and the length of it, mm-hmm. because, you know, even things like, well, we just reviewed Confusion.
Yeah.
And that game, granted, if you play it enough, that could end up being a longer game if you really dig into the strategy. But you can maybe get that game knocked out in half an hour, you know?
Oh, sure.
I think you probably, even if you play a pretty deep game of that, it could probably be less than half an hour, less than 45 minutes. I don't think anybody would call that a filler game either.
You know?
So, you know, I guess another definition you could have is something that if you're in a group of non-gamers, something that you could very quickly pull out and teach and get everybody in the pool, you know, quickly, that could be considered a filler game. I think about the business trip that I was just on. And mm-hmm. I didn't, you know, have a chance to play very many games, well, no games on the trip. But I also didn't bring any with me, you know. Because I guess I just felt it was a scientific conference, and I just sort of felt like even the people that I knew from my company that were going to be there, I knew none of them are really gamers, and so I didn't want to push that issue, and I knew I was there for business stuff and that, you know. But I had a lot of free time in the evenings where I could have, you know, called up, you know, one of my colleagues or something like that, and hey, you want to get together in the hotel bar or something and play a game and, or, you know, have a drink or whatever. And if I had had some filler games, then I maybe could have actually gotten some gaming in. So. Yeah. You know, so I don't know. It's, but I agree with you that I don't think that it's not a positive word that you know that's in the gaming community. I don't think.
Yeah, it's kind of like I don't know if You know, if it'd be better to say, I wouldn't even say a lighter game necessarily.
Yeah.
Because there are some heavy games that are shorter and in nature, or, you know, I almost wanted to say just a shorter game, you know,
yeah,
would be the best way to do it. And, you know, I'm not into making a bunch of labels for these things, but it just struck me when I was looking at all this Biblio stuff that, you know, it's like, oh, it's a great filler game.
Yeah,
it's a good game.
It's a good game. Yeah. Yeah. Well, think about that one guy who designs a game, and I don't, who designed Biblio?
Steve Finn.
Okay, so I don't know Steve Finn. This may be his first game or something like that. I have no idea. But let's say that, you know, and we're gonna talk about it in a second. That if Steve Finn only designed Biblios, if that was the only game that he designed, you know, and that he goes down in history as having designed just that game, you know, is that considered a really good thing to say he designed a really good filler? You know, that sounds kind of, you know, kind of bad. You know, he designed a good game, you know, and whether it takes 10 minutes to play or 4 hours to play, you know, I think that those short games should be given a KGB versus CIA Cold War. Absolutely. That's another game that can be played in about a half an hour that I don't think is probably, it would probably be in the filler category, but it's, you know, it's a lot more than that.
Yeah. So those are our thoughts on the filler thing, but we'd really like to hear you, the listener's thoughts on this. You know, do you believe in the air quote filler descriptor, or what would you call them, or what have your experiences been? Because, like
or
I said,
are we making too much of a big deal out of it?
Yeah, you know, I mean, that could be that too. You know? But I know for a fact that there are many gaming groups that, you know, Biblios or Citadels, that may be the heaviest thing they play.
Right.
And that's fine. You know, you don't have to play big complex games all the time.
Sure. Well, heck, all the mass market games, I'm just thinking about this, all the mass market games that are out there, most of them take a short amount of time.
Yeah.
You know, there aren't too many, except for like Risk, you know, there's not too many 2 to 3 hour mass market games, you know, but no one really calls those fillers, you know, either. It's just,
yeah, I mean, even if you compared complexity, you put Citadels compared to most mass market things, and Citadels comes off like, you know, a Democker or something, you know, this is huge, complex, like what? There's roles in your, I don't understand, you know.
Yeah.
So, something to think about, but give us your thoughts. Send an email to the Game On Inbox
at gameoninbox@gmail.com,
or give us a call at the Game On Hotline
4138 Game On.
Just keeping them on his toes over there. Mm-hmm. Let us know what you think on filler games, or if they should eat. What was that?
I don't know.
If they should even be called that. I broke into German there.
That's right. And if you think they should be called that, then, you know, tell us why, and what are your favorites that fit into that category? You know, is there a new term we could come up with besides filler for something that fits a half an hour time frame, but is just a really good game? You know, filler just sounds like we're giving them short shrift there.
Yeah, let us know.
All right. So speaking of that, we're going to be talking about a filler game, aren't we?
Yeah.
No. We're going to be talking about a good short game, right?
That's right.
That's Biblios. But before we do that review of Biblios, Cody's got our contest.
That's right. We have a copy of the new out-of-the-box game, Focabulary. It's a party game where you're going to be using these, they don't call them dice, but there's basically these big dice, these big cubes. That have different word segments on them, and you're going to be making up kind of funny and zany words. It's a great party game, and if you know out-of-the-box's track record, you know they produce great things, and we want to give away a copy of Focabulary, and not only that, but a pair of Game On dice.
Ooh.
Included in that.
Nice.
And all you have to do is come up with a word. Now, what we're looking for is not a word for maybe this filler thing. That may be a bit more on the serious side.
Right.
We want to know. We want you to take your biggest pet peeve in gaming, whether it be analysis paralysis people, or people who don't know how to bathe at conventions, or any other pet peeve in gaming you might have.
Our podcast.
That's right.
That's your biggest pet peeve.
Game On phobia. And we want you to make a word, make a brand new word that summarizes that in one word. And we're going to look through them all, and the winner will get a copy of Focabulary and a pair of Game On dice. Perfect.
That's great. Yeah. Right. Like Tom Vasilemia. Sounds like a pretty bad disease there. I don't know.
My goodness.
I'm not sure what the symptoms of that are, but I don't want it.
Yeah. You know, Wakelinitis, you're buying all these new miniature games.
Exactly.
But anyway, as we mentioned earlier, you know how to contact us either by email or by the hotline. Give us your one word and then give us the definition of that word. And whoever gets that will get this brand new copy of Focabulary and a pair of Game On dice. Who could ask for more?
You got about 2 weeks to get your entries in, so get them in.
Do it.
All right, so we're about to do something a little bit unprecedented in the history of Game On with Cody and John, and that's we're going to do a review of a game that both of us have not played.
I've played it.
Well, no, I mean, you've played it, but I haven't played it.
Oh, okay.
Both of us haven't played it together. Oh, I see, yes. Yeah. So Cody was very excited about this game, and not to give too much of a spoiler, but he's going to be given the full rundown on the rules for this one. It's rare that I get to kick it to him for the rules, explanation, all that kind of stuff. And so he's going to sort of present this game to me at the same time he's presenting it to you, the listeners, and we'll decide together whether it's something that we're interested in buying, trying, or denying.
Very nice.
So, Cody, tell us a little bit about Biblios.
See, I picked the short game, so I don't have to prep a lot here.
You're always well prepared.
Thank you. So Biblios is a game designed by Steve Finn. From what I have researched, it was originally called Scripts and Scribes, and I can't tell if it was only print and play or if it had a publisher originally, but this has been the new publisher, Iello. They've kind of taken it and reproduced it in this game called Biblios, and the whole shtick is that the theme kind of tacked on, but hey, what are you going to do?
Yeah.
You play the abbot. You each play an abbot that is a head of a monastery, and you're trying to collect things. You want to have the most impressive library of all your peers, which, you know, monks are very concerned about that. but throughout the game, you're going to be collecting. There are five categories of items you can find. You can have pigments, you know, to illuminate the tomes. You can have monks who serve to illuminate your tomes. You can have forbidden tomes, which are bad. Well, they're not bad, but, you know.
They haven't been properly illuminated by your monks.
That's right. holy books and manuscripts. Hmm. And you're going to be collecting these various things to kind of make your library the best. But it's interesting because values of these different items can go up and down throughout the game. So what happens is, at the beginning of the game, the game comes with, it's a pretty nice little setup. It comes in a box that I can best describe kind of, it looks like a book on the outside, which is fitting. But when you, it has like a magnetic flap on it. So when you open it, it opens like a book.
And it looks
you,
really nice.
And when you close it, it magnets. It magnets shut. But in there, you're going to get a deck of cards. You're going to get a scriptorum board, which is this small little board, and then dice to show the values of each of the five categories.
Those are big chunky dice, too.
Big old chunky dice. Really nice.
Nice.
So to start out, you're going to set the scriptorum board in the center, and all of the values start at 3. And they will go up and down throughout the game. And so the game is really set into two phases. And if you've ever played For Sale, it reminds me a little of that. So the first thing you're going to do is you have the gift phase, which is phase number one. And what you're going to do is you have the deck of cards. You will take out some cards based on the number of players, and that will tell you in the rules. But going around in order, you're going to allocate cards. So say you're playing a four-player game. The active player allocates 5 cards. And what you're going to do is you're going to look at the card and decide whether to keep it and put it in front of you, to put it in the auction pile where it will be auctioned off later, or to put it in a public pile. Now, the trick is you can only allocate 1 card to yourself, 1 card to the auction pile, and everything else has to go in the public space. The trick is that you only get to see the cards 1 at a time. So if you see a card that's pretty good, there could be better. You know, do you press your luck? Do you keep it for yourself? Do you put it in the auction pile? Do you put it out where someone else can grab it?
Ink and gold.
Yeah. And so what these cards look like, essentially I named the 5 items earlier, but they all have values from ranging anywhere from 1 to 4. Mm. And so the big idea is at the end of the game, you're going to go through each category, and whoever has the most points in that category wins how many ever victory points the die is set at.
That'll change throughout the game.
And that'll change throughout the game. I'll explain that in a minute.
Uh-huh.
So say Forbidden Tomes at the end of the game is worth 4 points. If you have the most Forbidden Tomes, then you get that 4 points at the end.
Oh.
So you kind of have to, since everything starts at 3, you kind of have to check, and you know, you're going to be watching the market, and those will be more desirable cards. But anyway, these cards will range anywhere from 1 to 4 and will be one of those 5. Now, certain things like the Forbidden Tomes, they don't have any... I don't think there's a 4 value Forbidden Tomes, but there's lots of 1s and 2s. Versus Pigments, which don't have any 1s, but have more of the higher numbers.
Oh, okay.
So they're not all created equal there. So anyway, and the only other cards there are gold cards, values 1, 2, and 3, which are used in the auction phase, which I'll mention later. And then there are church cards, and the church cards are what change the value on the die. If you get a church card, either by selecting it for yourself, buying it in an auction, or picking it from the player space, then you immediately do what it says on the card. Now, that could be the church cards will let you affect one or two dice, and they will let you raise them by one or lower them by one, the value on it. So that's getting the church cards lets you play the market a little bit.
Do you raise them both? Lower them both, or can you do one of each?
It depends on the card.
Oh, the cards are different.
Yeah, okay. Like there's one that says affect, take one die and lower its value by one.
Oh, I see.
There's another card, take two different dice, raise each of their values by one.
The cards will just tell you what to do.
Yeah, the card will tell you what to do.
Cool.
So those are all the cards in the game you'll be looking at, deciding whether to keep, put them in a pile to auction, or putting them in the public space. So once you've allocated all the cards, then going around, starting with the player to your left, they'll each take a card from the public space. So you will continue, and then play passes. The active player is now the player on your left. So essentially, each turn, everyone's getting one card. And so you're going to keep going around the table and doing this until the deck is exhausted. And so this is basically forming your hand. So a lot like For Sale, this is just getting you ready for the second phase, which is the auction phase. So the way that once that phase is over, whoever started the first phase will start the auction phase as well. And what they're going to do is shuffle up the auction deck and flip over the top card of the deck. So say it's a two of pigments. You see what pigments is worth, you see how many are in your hand, and whether you decide to go for it. So this is where you bid gold. So the player to your left starts the bidding. They may say one, two. The trick with this is that you can bid more than you have. So if you have four gold, you can bid five gold on something, hoping just to drive the price up. However, if you get caught, then everyone gets to take a card at random from your hand, and then they bid on the item again, but you can't bid on it.
Ooh.
There is a variant where you only lose one card because some people think that's a too fierce of a penalty for bluffing. So you can decide that for yourself. But I think it's kind of interesting because,
it's harsh. Crime doesn't pay.
Crime does not pay.
Even, especially in the world of Biblios.
That's right. The only other way you can do it is that if it's a gold card being auctioned, then you bid in cards. You're saying, I will discard one card for that gold. I will discard two cards. Go around like that.
There's no actual chips or tokens for money. It's all on cards.
Yes, all in cards. The cards, like the gold cards, will either be one, two, and three. And you don't get change either. So if all you have are threes, then, if you want to bid four on something, then you're going to end up really having to pay six. So you'll go around and you'll bid on every card that's in the auction pile. And church cards can come up in the auction pile if people put them there. And that can change the values of the items as you go along. So then you're going to basically bid through all of the different cards, changing the active player for each card, until that deck is run out. And then you're going to just go through each of the five categories, see who has the most, and whoever wins each category gets the die and how many points are on it, and whoever has the most points wins.
That's the whole game.
And that's the whole game.
Wow.
Yeah, it's just that simple.
Okay.
So, when I played it, what struck me is it's a nice, to use the filler term, it's a great 30-minute game.
Yeah.
And for me, I really like it because it combines a whole lot of different things. It combines it's a nice auction game because some of those auctions get kind of heated because you don't know really where to spend your limited amount of gold. There's a bit of set collection in it because you kind of end up focusing on one or two categories and really going after that. There's a bluffing mechanic because you're going to be trying to bluff people to raise their prices. There's a drafting mechanic, which is kind of because that whole first round, you're basically kind of drafting these cards and what you end up seeding in the auction pile may come back and bite you.
Yeah.
So it takes all of these different elements and really combines it into this really nice 30-minute experience. It's not too deep, but it's deep enough where, you're not playing something really mindless. It's engaging, but you can still kind of talk while you do it. And the production value is great. My one complaint is that, and I've seen other threads like this on Board Game Geek, it has an odor to it. I don't know the ink or where it was printed. It has a definite odor to it, which I assume will just go away after time. But man,
it's the aroma of Biblios.
It smells like an old monk. It's not great. But John's not played it. I'm hoping we can get it in here soon. But
it was our goal to play before we recorded. It just didn't quite work out. Yeah. But I'm excited about playing this one because the production quality, just looking at the game here, looks fantastic. And you know, any game that's going to be a 30-minute play time, but have some sort of deep and meaningful decisions, it's fun. You know, so it sounds good to me.
It retails for $30, maybe a touch high, but the production quality is pretty nice. Cards have a good stock to them.
Are they wooden dice?
No, they're plastic.
Okay.
But I would say it's going to be a great addition to your collection, and it's great for non-gamers as well. And it's even a good gateway game, I would say. So definitely check out Biblios at your friendly professional gaming store and let us know what you think.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for joining us for another illuminating episode. Get it? Monks illuminating books.
Oh, I didn't get
Biblios.
It. Totally didn't get that.
Another filler episode of Game On with Cody and John.
Aren't they all?
We hope it sufficiently got through a block of time for you. As always, we invite you to listen to Wayne as he tells you all the great ways you can contact us. Check out GameOnPodcast.com. You can get information on getting the cool Game On dice, which helps support the show. And they're really cool dice. And yes. I'm not just saying that. They're really neat. You can check us out at Origins, too, to maybe get a die for yourself. John, you want to talk to us about donations a little bit?
Yeah, so on GameOnPodcast.com, we also have our donation button. And on the last episode, we brought to you a specific need that we have, or a specific desire that we have, I guess, to be able to once again participate in the Extra Life a charity game event at Myriad Games in New Hampshire. We were able to go to that last year, and so we just need a little bit of help in covering some of those costs. And so if you think that's a worthwhile thing for you to put your financial backing behind, we would certainly appreciate it. We've gotten some great donations already in, and so we'll kind of give you the tote board tally next episode. But we would invite you to, if you $1, $5, whatever you're able to give, will help us to get to Extra Life to be able to. Do that charity game event for children's hospitals in the Children's Miracle Network. And so we would invite you to go and check that out. We appreciate all the support that we get, not only financially, of course, but just your listenership, reviews that you put on iTunes and things like that, participation in our guild and Board Game Geek. Join us in 2 weeks. We've got another great episode coming for you. We should be back on a regular schedule, I think.
Yeah, I think that's going to be our Gen Con episode where we get you... prepped and ready to talk about Gen Con?
Definitely a convention episode.
Yeah.
Because we've got Origins coming up in a couple of weeks. I don't have my calendar in front of me. We'll get an episode out to you guys with some great gaming content. We love making this podcast for you. And until next time,
Game On.
This episode of Game On is sponsored by Myriad Games on behalf of friendly professional game stores everywhere. If you'd like to contact Cody and John, send them an email at gameoninbox@gmail.com or leave a voicemail at 413-8-GAME-ON. For more content, check out our website at GameOnPodcast.com. Join our guild on BoardGameGeek.com and connect with other fans of the show. Become a fan of our show on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at GameOnPodcast. Game On with Cody and John is a proud member of the Pulp Gamer Media Network. Check out other great shows on PulpGamer.com. Thanks for listening, and until next time, Game On!